League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the WTF One That Time When podcast. And today, we are discussing... In fact, let's not dive into what we're discussing. We're going to dive into something much more important than that. The names of the two gentlemen opposite me right now. Who are they?
Tommy.
Dan.
You could have given it a bit more enthusiasm.
Tommy.
Dan.
Thank you. Lovely. Today, we are discussing That Time When Nobody Wanted to Win at a Wet Nürburgring. Nobody.
Nobody.
Not one single soul wanted to win this race.
It just didn't fancy it.
No. I mean, why would you want to win a race? A Formula One race, of course.
Exactly.
This year's German Grand Prix has gone down as an all-time classic with tricky conditions, plot twists for the leading contenders, and an unexpected result. But 20 years ago, Germany played host to a race which was probably even more chaotic. Today, we're going to be talking about that time when nobody wanted to win the 1999 European GP. Not the German...
No,
there was a bit more sort of nitty-gritty details with that one, wasn't there? We won't dive into that, but
Hockenheim was the German Grand Prix. Yeah,
shocking.
European.
Even though Nürburgring is in Germany. Anyway, it's the 1999 European Grand Prix at the Nürburgring. So, gentlemen, let's look at 1999. What did F1 look like back then?
Yeah, so if anyone's listened to the... how many have we done from 99? I think we only did the Malaysian Grand Prix where we mentioned about Schumacher with his broken leg.
Yep.
So we briefly mentioned that. If you didn't listen to that one, go back and listen, because it's wonderful.
Come on.
But just a brief overview. Yeah, the title fight was between Eddie Irvine and Mika Häkkinen, and that was mainly because Michael Schumacher had broken his leg at Silverstone.
Yeah.
Sad times.
Yeah, and, you know, I think we discussed it in the Malaysia one that he probably would have wrapped up that title quite easily with the way things turned out.
But instead his leg was wrapped up.
Boom.
That actually made me sad that I made any kind of joke about Schumacher's broken leg, because it broke my heart to 7 years old me watching that happen. But there were lots of strong young drivers in midfield teams performing well. Lots of unpredictable races meant lots of unexpected results, which is what we dream of as Formula One fans.
Yeah. I seem to remember, was it the French Grand Prix where Barry Keller was on pole and a Stewart, and then you had Jean Alesi and a Sauber.
Like Panis in third and a Prost and stuff like
that. So the equivalent of having, you know, top three of like Stroll, Kubica and Hülkenberg or something.
That's a stretch.
Savage.
so why was it like that? Why was it so crazy?
Well, I think just you had Schumacher out, you had Irvine and Häkkinen going for the title. Irvine, the Ferrari was probably the best car, but Irvine wasn't the best driver to make the most of it, is probably the kindest way to put that.
You didn't have that outrageous midfield gap either that we do in Formula One.
Do you reckon there's any reason for the fact that the whole grid was closer? Was there any sort of technical regulations back then?
Was it the lack of technical changes?
I think
that people are just starting to get the hang of everything.
Yeah, because the year before for 98, the cars got a lot simpler with a lot less aero and a lot less grip and speed of it, essentially. And I think that sort of just helped close the pack up a bit, because suddenly it was the less complex, so teams with less resources were able to maximise more of what was available of the cars.
Okay, all right. So Jordan was one of those teams that genuinely started to look like a top team.
Yeah, that's the... Well, and this is going to break my heart to say it. Not with Damon Hill, but with Heinz Harald Frentzen. I think Damon Hill,
an amateur back then.
He was.
He was retired in his mind up.
Yeah, if anyone's read his book, he flat out admits that he was already mentally checked out of Formula One and pretty much wanted to retire at the British Grand Prix that year. Wasn't allowed to for contract reasons, and he'd already mentally checked out, hadn't he?
Yeah. But it was this weird sort of period between sort of the middle of 98, I suppose, and maybe even the beginning of 2000, where Jordan were kind of in a position to where you would almost say Red Bull were 2 or 3 years ago, maybe, where they weren't as good as the top teams, but some races they'd be good enough to pick up the pieces if the top teams fell apart, and they were sort of giving them a bit more hassle than they might have otherwise expected.
Lovely. Well, that's what we dream of, isn't it? Mm. That kind of close midfield battle. Maybe 2021 will be giving us those 1999 feels.
Give us those Jordan racing back at the front. Who knows? Racing point for the title challenge.
Oh, you heard it here first. Tommy, are you getting emotional? You're coughing a lot. Sorry, because you spoke about Damon Hill being rubbish in 99. you better stop coughing or I'm going to slap you.
Right, okay, I got it out.
So let's have a look at the season situation heading into the European Grand Prix at the Nürburgring. So quite late on in the season, old Nürburgring back then.
Yeah, mm. End of September.
Yeah, end of September. I mean,
Three races to go in September. Now we're finishing the season in December. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, we're going to be racing when Santa's going over in our skies, aren't we, soon?
He'll be the guest driver at the season finale one day.
Yeah, he'll probably win. But probably doesn't fit the technical regulations. But anyway, three races left to go. Hakkinen and Irvine on 60 points. And neither driver had been having brilliant years. I guess Hakkinen maybe having a bit of an off one. Irvine just not having much talent.
Sad but true.
Yeah.
Hakkinen should have done a lot better that season.
Yeah.
Any reason why you think Hakkinen was checked out or just not particularly performing?
I've always wondered if once Schumacher sort of broke his leg, he lost the motivation to sort of push himself a little bit.
He felt like it was wrapped up after that.
Yeah, I think
he let his guard down a bit.
Yeah.
And Irvine came snapping away with his very overpowered Ferrari.
Well, not very overpowered.
Little bit.
It was good enough.
It was good enough, yeah.
Okay. So you had Heinz Hardfrensen on 50 points, Coulthard on 48. But they were still all in the championship hunt with 10 points
for a win. So, yeah, Frentzen was only a race win behind with three to go in a Jordan, which shows how impressive of a season he had.
He'd just won the Italian Grand Prix the race before, which was where Hakkinen famously spun out while leading and went and had a little cry in the trees.
Oh, sad.
Bless him.
So, the European Grand Prix was a very important race and could massively swing the title, as you mentioned. You know, Frentzen only one race win behind. All to play for, really. Even David Coulthard was very much still in the championship
even
hunt.
David Coulthard.
Championship hunt, even. So let's look at qualifying. So it was a drying session, as we've seen it in the Nürburgring quite a few times. It loves to have those changeable conditions. Yep. And positions changing loads in the closing minutes. And Frentzen takes pole for Jordan.
Yeah.
Unbelievable scenes.
It was one of those classic, like the old 12-lap qualifying system where you basically had 12 laps, which is... four flying laps.
Tommy,
essentially.
If you cough one more time, I'm going to literally
sorry.
This podcast. So drink your water. Carry on.
Yeah, so you had your 12 laps in an hour, and it got dropped because for the first 40 minutes, nothing would happen.
Yeah.
But it did have this tendency where it could get really good at the end, where you had every driver just smashing out times. And pole position changed for this race four times in the last 2 minutes.
Wow.
So you had Ralf Schumacher and the Williams came across the line, took pole, then Hakkinen, then Coulthard beat that, and then Frentzen beat that again. So it was like one of those quality, like, just ramping up the drama.
Yeah, we do love a changeable condition qualifying session because it mixes up the grid, especially nowadays when we're praying for a mixed up grid. So as you say, yeah, Coulthard started second, Hakkinen third, and Eddie Irvine all the way down in ninth with teammate Mika Salo only 12th.
Ninth, that's not where you want to be when you're trying to go for a world title, is it?
No.
When Hakkinen's up in P3, got his teammate just in front of him. You know, would at that point, would Coulthard been in it for the helping stage?
I think it was seen at this race that this was kind of like, if Coulthard didn't do well, then it would be Hakkinen.
Yeah,
but it was still, McLaren always, I mean, I say always, but they like to give them a fair chance, even though Hakkinen was probably the favoured driver at the time.
Yeah, very much so.
Fair shout to give Coulthard at least one more race and then two races to go. If he's not ahead of or near Hakkinen, then fair play. You know, put your eggs in one basket. So the first start, and that's a key word in this, Zanardi and Janay lined up on the grid wrong. And the race start was aborted during the start sequence. And there was loads of confusion because I think I remember this actually. There were so many people were jump starting and
All the lights came on and then just stayed on.
Yeah, because usually when you have someone stall on the grid or something and they abort the start, like the lights go off and the yellow lights will flash. But this time people were out of position on the grid and the five lights kept on going on and then they were held. And then when the drivers would be expecting the lights to go off, the yellow lights came on and people reacted to that rather than the lights going off.
They just saw a change and sort of bolted.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he had like the first five drivers and John Lacey down the back of the grid, who loves a jump start, all just sort of shot off. And you've got sort of Murray Walker going, Frentzen has jumped the start, Hakkinen has jumped the start. And Ralf Schumacher almost went into the back of Coulthard.
So what was the conclusion?
It was just, I think it was someone further back. It was, who was it? Jeanne and Zanardi. One of them had stopped like a position too far behind. So everyone lined up wrong behind them. Yeah. And so someone saw that and they obviously aborted the start. And
so in terms of the jump starts, there was nothing.
There was no jump start. It looked like a jump start because on the TV feed at the time, it was the grid and the lights were in like a separate cutaway box at the top, but it only showed the lights and you couldn't see the yellow lights flashing above it.
Gotcha.
From like a TV perspective, it
that must have been
like,
so confusing.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird
commentators.
One.
So the race finally gets underway after that confusion. Another formation lap to get everybody in place, I imagine. And then Frentzen holds the lead. Hakkinen jumps Coulthard, which is obviously big for their little inter-team battle. And then a big accident further back. Denis Rolhoop fails. And the safety car comes out.
Yeah, that it was a scary crash. But watching it back, I watched the highlights video of this race. And in my head, I already remembered the commentary from Murray Walker, which is so comedy for such a horrific accident. So Denis gets flipped by Alex Wurz and he goes under and flips over. And what actually happens is the roll hoop, did it fail? But I thought it dug into the ground.
I think it failed
wet.
When it hit the tarmac.
Yeah, it was wet. And then there's like
wet grass.
So it kind of like dug in and his car was completely flat. But Murray Walker, just you're watching it. You can see it in the background. He's having this absolutely enormous accident. And Murray Walker just goes, bang!
Is that it?
Yeah. Just goes, oh, bang! That was it.
Oh, Murray. Amazing. I wonder if Murray, if he was commentating today, would he get the same legendary status or would he go down as a Jonathan Ledyard?
Yeah, where everyone's like, you're getting it wrong all
the
exactly.
time. Yeah, exactly. I feel like...
Yeah.
Maybe that because of whole social media and how easy it is to complain, Murray be seen in a completely different light? What do you reckon, Dan?
Yeah, I think he probably would. He was reaching that point at the end of his career anyway, and that's why he stopped, because it went from beyond
almost too far.
It went from
comical to just not getting anything right.
Yeah,
which is fair. But he's still seen as a legend, which is lovely. Yeah. So Eddie Irvine was making progress from ninth on the grid, and the front four were very, very close. And then the rain started to fall on lap 18, but not massively heavy, but enough to make some of the teams scratch their heads. Some bits of the track were wet, and it wasn't clear whether to go on to the dries or the intermediates.
Always the best kind of races where I think we've had this conversation before, where wet races, obviously everyone F1 fans just go, wet races are the best.
Yeah.
But when it rains all the way through and they're just on wet tyres through the whole race, sometimes it can be a bit dull.
Yeah,
the best wet races are always the ones where they don't have a clue what tyre to be on. It keeps changing. That's when the chaos happens.
When you know you might be 10 seconds a lap quicker in the first sector, but then 13 seconds a lap slower in the middle and the last.
Yeah.
So it's...
Well, that's basically what happened then. The first four were separated by something like 1.3 seconds, just going around really close. And then the rain came and Frentzen went off at the final chicane and... Ron Dennis made the call, like, right, this is the time. We need to get someone on wet. So Hakkinen was ahead, so they pulled him in for wet. Ferrari did the same for Salo, so that they could sort of get an idea for Irvine. And then, so on like the next lap, Irvine came in, but by the time that had happened, it had stopped raining. So there's this really funny moment in the pit lane where Irvine's stationary with three wheels on his car, because the team's made the last second decision to put slicks on instead of wets, but one of the tyres is missing and they're all just running around looking for it. The mechanic finds it, gets next to the hub and then starts chatting to like the other mechanic guy, like, why aren't you putting it on?
Yeah.
And then Martin Brundle has this iconic piece of commentary, which is like, now they're having a committee meeting about it. Stick it on and send him out there.
And, yeah, I remember that.
And it cost him like, it was in the stationing for 35 seconds because Ferrari just couldn't find this tyre. And then when they did, didn't put it on straight away for some reason.
Yeah, there's loads of ridiculous, it fuels conspiracy theories, even though it's a load of rubbish. But we mentioned in the last one about, when we did Malaysia 99, that Schumacher didn't want Eddie Irvine to win this title.
And, Schumacher hit the tyre.
Yeah, people were saying, oh, this just showed that Ferrari didn't give a damn about Irvine and they wouldn't fumble up his whole pit stop.
Yeah, they would have won the championship no matter who wins.
Exactly.
Surely. It's Ferrari.
It's Ferrari. So,
So Ralf Schumacher comes alive for Williams and moves into second. And Hakkinen and Irvine are now down in 12th and 13th, with Hakkinen going onto the wrong tyres. As you say, he went onto the wets and then it started to dry out. And then Irvine with his 35-second stop. Probably could have had a nap in that time, couldn't he, really?
Then Murray Walker said about that pit stop, he said a pretty good Murrayism, which I thought was quite funny. He said, they've had a major mal-misorganisation problem there.
Mal-misorganisation.
Oh, Murray. Fantastic. You've got the track starting to dry out. Hakkinen has to pit again. Then Hakkinen is running in 14th and looks like he's given up. And then Heitz-Howard Frentzen retires. Schumacher then pits first and drops to third. Frentzen narrowly holds on ahead of Coulthard. It looks like there's a lot of stuff going on and very difficult to keep up with everything, especially with it being changeable conditions. And they both pit on the same lap, Frentzen and Coulthard. Frentzen stays again, but breaks down right after leaving the pits.
Hakkinen
and Irvine are way down, which is actually pretty crazy because obviously when we mentioned the title earlier, that puts Frentzen right into play that he's leading the race and Hakkinen and Irvine are out of it. But when Frentzen comes into the pits, looking like, you know, this is going to be an absolutely banging result for Jordan, they're going to get a race win while their two title rivals are at this. Yeah. I remember watching it thinking, is someone in Jordan going to win the championship?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I remember it just cutting to Frentzen. And obviously Murray Walker going, oh my God, Frentzen or whatever.
Yeah.
And was it an electrical failure?
Yeah. It's the same on the first lap when that Deniz crash happened. That happened because Hill's car broke down in the middle of the corner and Wurz took avoiding action and clipped Deniz.
Yeah.
And then Frentzen had exactly the same problem at exactly the same part of the track.
Oh, wow.
After pulling away in a stationary car. Because back then, reliability was awful compared to today.
Yeah.
And it was quite common that cars would break down after pit stops because they were so highly strung that that stopping and starting again would often cause something to fail. And it seemed like that was a bit of a weakness for Jordan at that race.
So heartbreak for Frentzen breaking down when he was in the lead of the race.
Yeah.
So that meant that David Coulthard then led the race. So on lap 36, rain comes down again with David Coulthard leading from Ralf Schumacher. And this time it was raining a lot heavier.
Yeah.
And Coulthard slides off. Just fancies, I don't want this championship
This is peak Coulthard, I feel, that he has finally got this chance to take it to Hakkinen. He's leading the race. Hakkinen's nowhere. If he gets this win, he's now looking good to be a title challenger. And on his own, just bins it in the wet.
Was he quite far ahead at that point?
I think he was a little way ahead, because Ralf Schumacher had pitted and was on slicks, and Coulthard, I think, was potentially going for a one stopper.
Okay.
So he was trying to stay out on slicks so that if it dried up again, he obviously wouldn't have to stop again.
Yeah.
And he just slid off.
Just slid off and off he goes. And then it became treacherous conditions with drivers spinning and going off. And the wets were obviously at this point the quicker tyres, but some still stayed out on slicks, notably Ralf Schumacher and Fisichella, who were running first and second. So it was getting too wet, but the slicks back then were
grooved,
weren't they? So they had a bit of water. A tiny bit of water clearance.
Little.
I mean, more grip than you'd have with the Pirellis these days. You know, that would be like driving on ice.
Yeah. Anything's more grip than the Pirellis these days.
Ouch. Really. Shocking. So Ralf and Fisichella are running first and second, but are they going ridiculously slow compared to the rest of them?
Yeah. They're not putting in great times, but it's that classic thing where they're ahead, so they've got the time to play with sort of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas the people who are further back, you know, they're not going to necessarily gain anything
by
staying out when everyone else is, so they gamble for the wets. I love that era of cars because they didn't have a whole lot of downforce or mechanical grip, so they're not necessarily just sliding around. It looks like the drivers are actually drifting out of corners, and it looked really cool.
I saw some in the highlights clip actually, and you can see, I think, Fisichella coming out the final corner and just completely sideways. It's cool.
Sounds like some nice camera shots, if I'm honest.
And Tora Takagi for Arrows tried to stay out on slicks, and he had a massive crash coming onto the back straight, and his ripped a wheel off, and his car came to rest sort of next to the track, and one of his wheels was rolling down the track, and they just covered it under yellows.
Yeah,
like
the whole tire was just like complete and just rolling upright, rolling down the track, yeah. on pretty much on the racing line. To
yeah.
get down.
Yeah.
So. Wow. They're like, now that yellows would do.
Yellows will do it.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy that the only safety car was for the Diniz incident, and then you had this crazy race and there were no safety cars for the rest of it. Despite. Wow.
I reckon if it was today, it would have been about 100 fest, yeah. safety cars and no actual accident. Well, to be fair, they probably wouldn't let them race in those treacherous conditions anyway, would they? No, in 2019. But so Irvine was continuing to make some progress, was he as well?
Yep. He was. He sort of moved up to, I think he was just outside of the points in seventh now. Häkkinen had by this point seemingly given up. He was lapping in the middle part of the race 2 or 3 seconds slower than the leaders, and it like comparable to backmarkers, and it just looked like he just completely lost motivation right. just to carry on because he felt there was no point. But Irvine was doing well. But then just as the rain starts to stop again, Ferrari pulled the big brain move of pulling Irvine in for wets.
And lo and behold, what happens? The track starts to dry again.
Yep.
So Ralph Pitson drops to fourth. Ferrari, as you say, do the strategy to bring in Irvine, but put a wets on.
Yep.
So then he has to come in again for dries.
He comes in later again for slicks. Yep.
Jesus. So the order now is that Fisichella leads for Benetton. And it looks like it's a battle between him and Ralf Schumacher to take their first ever victory. Neither team had won a race for 2 years.
Yeah, so they weren't a strong team, Benetton or Williams, era, really.
No. So it was a big, big moment for both those teams. And I imagine the driver was also rather nervous, especially in those difficult conditions.
Yeah.
And then Fisichella spins out.
Yeah. I mean, he's done all the hard work. He's got through the wettest part on slicks. He survived a couple of leery moments and offs. And then just as the track is getting drier again, he just spins out, and then there's a shot of him leaning against the fence with his head in his hands, just in tears, because, you know,
there's a chance of a Grand Prix victory, not just an amazing result for a midfield team.
Yeah,
the chance to win your first race.
Yeah,
and it's that era as well where, you know, he spun off, and nowadays you'd be able to get back on the track and no problem.
But, yeah,
I think the cars stalled quite a lot, didn't they, as well, when they had an off. So Fisichella, it wasn't even that much of a dramatic spin, but he just spun off and stalled the car, and that's it. Game over.
Game over indeed. Heart-wrenching stuff for Fizzy. So then Ralf Schumacher retakes the lead, looks set to win his first ever race, but it only lasts for a lap as he gets a puncture.
So we've had, who were them? Frentzen out, Coulthard leading and out, Fisichella leading and out. Now Ralf Schumacher leading it out.
Four drivers took the lead and then lost it in the space of 17 laps.
It reminds me of that Monaco race where everyone just left, isn't it? It was one of those crazy ones. And then you've got Irvine and Häkkinen still way down the order and out of the points. So still neither of them looking like they were going to get anywhere near the front.
No, they were basically just relying on the retirements, which were, luckily for them, coming.
Spoiler and what was coming was good old Johnny Herbert and his Stewart. So Stewart had quite a good car, and Barrichello had poles and a podium with it. Herbert, not so great of a season for him.
No, it was the second to last year of his career, and I think he was not winding down, but finding it harder to maybe get the motivation up. Or to sort out a new car. It was his first year with the team as well. He hadn't had that good a season, but it had a decent race, and basically when the second rain shower came down, he was one of those that was down the order who thought, you know, he might as well gamble, and he basically pitted at the perfect time for wets, made up an absolute ton of time on everybody, and then when he came in to put the slicks on again, he was good to go to the end of the race and had a gap over everyone else he was fighting. And once Fisichella and Schumacher had dropped out or dropped back, then he was leading by like 15 seconds.
Jeez.
And leading ahead of only a Prost and his teammate and another Stewart. So not exactly, it's not exactly like he got into the lead and then had a McLaren or a Ferrari chasing him down. It was
Jarno Trulli and a Prost.
Yeah.
And then Barrichello running third. So
I think Barrichello must have been a little bit gutted about this race, because he had been, from my memory, he'd been pretty unbelievable.
He'd had two or three times that he could have won races.
In a Stewart, in dry conditions as well.
Yeah, I think remember was it Brazil?
And Austria, he was doing all right.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had finished in the top five seven times that season. So for a midfield car that wasn't getting many points. Like you said, Herbert only scored 2 points all year before this race.
So. And Barrichello had been doing well in that race as well. In the first rain shower, he kept it on slicks and gone up to like from 15th to like 4th or something. So he'd driven a great race, but just lost out slightly because he was ahead of Herbert on the time and they didn't feel like it was maybe worth gambling with his strategy.
Right.
And Herbert got the benefit, made the most of it. And
then he's leading.
He's leading.
Some more heartbreak as well for Minardi. Both Minardi drivers of Marc Genet and Luca Badoa were still going and had benefited. Badoa running 4th and Genet 6th. And Minardi hadn't scored a point in almost 4 years and had only ever both cars in the points once in 1989.
Imagine Williams this year, but every year for years and years and years and years and years.
Yeah.
So like how much that meant to get even a point, but he was 4th. He was one place away from a podium.
It's like the equivalent of 8th and 10th now sort of thing, but now they're 4th and 6th. Like that's more points than...
Yeah.
Like almost as many points as Grosjean or Haas would have scored this year.
Yeah, and exactly.
Like, it's crazy how good they were doing.
So Luca Badoa in particular had been in F1 for ages and had never scored a point ever, and his gearbox failed with 13 laps to go.
In 4th place.
Yeah.
And he broke down crying at the side of the track.
One of the saddest things you'll ever watch in F1. Horrible. If you find the clip, he's got his visor open and you can see him absolutely bawling his eyes out. And he's just... lent on the side part of his car.
And there's like a marshal comes over and consoles him because it is horrible. Like, it is one of my... I was a massive Fisichella fan.
Yeah.
So when he crashed out of the race, I was fuming at the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I was more upset that Badoa had not scored points.
Yeah, that is really sad. So looking towards the final few laps then, so Herbert had a massive lead with Trulli fending off Barrichello, who's trying to make a Stewart 1-2. Which I can't imagine many people would have put odds on going into that race. But unfortunately, he couldn't do it. Villeneuve on course to score BAR's first points. And then he retired with 5 laps to go. And then Hakkinen and Irvine get a whiff of points, having been rubbish all day. Hakkinen finally wakes up and passes Irvine and Genet to finish 5th. Does that mean Genet finished 7th in the end?
No, it doesn't. Hakkinen was sort of... woke up, as you say, and then he was all over the back of Irvine. He tried a couple of moves, didn't quite make it work, and then Irvine eventually made a mistake and locked up at the chicane, which Martin Brundle called worse than a rookie error at the time. It's like
savage.
Nice.
But yeah, so Hakkinen got through and then he was able to catch Genet. But Irvine, he was quicker than the Minardi, but he didn't have the pace and he ran out of laps to get past. So
Genet finished sixth.
So Minardi
Eddie Irvine, the world championship contender, could not get past Minardi for a point.
Nope.
You can't write this, can you? You really can't.
No, but the best battle was between Trulli and Barrichello for second. It was, Trulli was late. He hadn't developed the Trulli train reputation yet, but this was kind of like a precursor to it, where he was out of position in a slower car and yet was still holding up Barrichello, who was way quicker.
Yeah.
And he defended really well, and it was a really well-deserved sort of result for all three of them, I think.
Yeah, wow.
Unbelievable podium.
Yeah.
A Stewart, a Prost, and a Stewart. Like, God.
That's the dream, isn't it? Like, jeez. Like,
is that the craziest top three of all time?
I think it probably... You've got to put it as the craziest top three of all time, because where were they in the Constructors' Championship? 9th and...
Yeah, I think Prost had only scored 3 points all year, and then suddenly they've got a car second. Herbert had only scored 2 points, and then he's winning a race.
Oh, wow.
That is insane.
Quite sensational. So as you say, Johnny Herbert won the race, his third career victory, and his first for Stewart in the team's third season. And Trulli, first podium in second, with Rubens third. Slightly unlucky and had come close, as you say, but it was great defending from Trulli. And a great little battle. And Herbert grabs would be the... Oh, right. So Herbert's win was the only one the team ever got.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a bit sad.
Stewart came in 97.
Yeah.
They got a podium in their first year, but then had a little bit of a rebuilding period. And then 99 was looking like they were making progress. But the team had been bought out by Jaguar. So that this would be their last year as Stewart. And then... things didn't go very well as Jaguar. They went better as Red Bull. So,
yeah.
But you have to wonder if if Jaguar hadn't bought the team out and basically mismanaged it into the ground.
Mismanaged, as Murray would say.
Yeah,
very interesting to think about what that could have led to. So let's quickly have a look at the different championship scenarios throughout the race. You had Frentzen and Coulthard both in prime positions to gain. The closest either got to the title, potentially.
Yeah. I mean, definitely Frentzen. I mean, Coulthard was Schumacher's main contender in 2001, but it was never really a contest, I don't think.
I hear you've got some stats, Dan, on the title situations during the race. Go on, hit me with
it. So basically, early in the race, when you had Frentzen leading from Häkkinen and Coulthard with Irvine out of the points, if it had finished like that, Häkkinen would have led on 66, followed by Irvine on 60, Frentzen on 60, and Coulthard on 52. So that was like a big swing for Häkkinen.
Yeah.
But then when Häkkinen dropped back with the tyre issues, you would have had a situation where Häkkinen, Irvine and Frentzen would have all been on 60 points with two races to go, and Coulthard behind on 54.
Wow.
And then when Frentzen retired and Coulthard was leading, it would have been Häkkinen and Irvine on 60, Coulthard on 58 and Frentzen on 50. So basically all of them at some point, except Irvine, had were in positions to massively gain.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But yeah, those 2 points that Häkkinen got proved to be pretty crucial at the end of the championship.
Yeah, which we spoke about in the Malaysia one, and went on to the final race where, you know, Schumi didn't help Eddie win the title, but Häkkinen had enough points that he could win the race and
yeah,
get the title. That fifth position was crucial
for
his win. Yeah. Finally, he woke up, as you say, you know, he finally got those couple of points, which may have felt like nothing at the time, but it absolutely proved vital, didn't it?
I have to say, I feel quite sorry for Ralf Schumacher in that race, because he was in the slowest car of the front runners before they all started dropping out, but he was driving the best. When the rain came down for the first time, he instantly attacked Coulthard and then started attacking Häkkinen. He was one of the fastest drivers on track the whole time. But
got shafted by a puncture.
And, you know, he's the only one, apart from Frentzen, who lost out, not for anything that's not their fault, really.
He was one of... I read this in my notes, that Ralf Schumacher is one of the strangest performance drivers ever, I think, in terms of...
Yeah.
He could just pull something out of nowhere, but also had the reputation of being a bit crap.
Yeah.
I guess a little bit like Grosjean now, like everyone slates him and he is a bit rubbish now, but... Then how many times has he bagged like a podium for Lotus and finished fourth when Haas were actually good?
He's kind of similar.
On his day can be unbelievable, and then like also absolutely terrible in some ways.
It's funny, after the race, Martin Brundle said, "Oh, it's good to see like the future of Formula One's in safe hands because of Schumacher, Ralf's good performance, and Trulli and Barrichello." And then that wasn't really the future of Formula One, because Schumacher came back and denied them all.
So, having a look at that race then, was it one of the best races ever, do you reckon?
I think so. I put it as my top five. I was just actually looking at, this kind of sums up how crazy it is, if you look at where the drivers started in a dry qualifying race, qualifying and finished in the race. So the winner, Johnny Herbert, was 14th on the grid. Trulli was second, started 10th. Rubens Barrichello was third, started 15th. Ralf Schumacher, fourth. Häkkinen third, and Genet with the final point starting 20th.
Yeah, it's crazy when you think that, was it last year when Hamilton won in Germany from 14th, but he did that in a Mercedes, and then that race was so crazy that Johnny Herbert did it in a Stewart.
Yeah, and won by 22 seconds.
Yeah.
A Stewart. He finished a minute ahead of Häkkinen.
My memory of it was that the top three were quite close together.
Yeah,
but I didn't
realise
that Herbert was so far ahead.
Yeah.
Absolutely dominated it. So that's it, that's pretty much us done. You know, it was a fantastic race to kind of relive with you both. Will new rules like this allow for a ridiculous podium? Will we see stuff like that?
I hope so.
Hopefully. I mean, we don't want to see that happening every time, but I think this year sort of shown
the odd occasion.
The unexpected podium finisher is
Good for Formula
everyone
One.
Everyone loves it.
Yeah, it's really enjoyable.
Because that was the beauty of it back then, wasn't it? With the fact the field spread wasn't as big, it meant that if there was a time where a driver would make a great performance or whatever, they would get the rewards of a podium. Whereas you might see a great drive now and Carlos Sainz finishes seventh or something.
Yeah.
And it's not the same, is it? Because the top three teams are so far down the road.
And the midfielder is sitting duck, so they have to do it at the end of the race. They can't put in a really banging performance because they're just going to get, you know,
wherever,
even Bottas, you know, starting last in Abu Dhabi, can still get to fourth very easily. So,
fingers crossed, 2021 will be a juicy one.
Yeah.
Hey? Yeah. Right, thank you both.
That's our last That Time When of the year as well.
I know, the last That Time When. I do enjoy these. I hope everyone listening has enjoyed them as well. Make sure to share your suggestions in the comments for future topics below. And also let us know if you enjoyed it with using a 5-star rating. Nothing less, especially it's Christmas. If you give anything less than 5 stars,
Christmas
you are
present
the Scrooge. You are the Scrooge or the Grinch?
It's
the Grinch.
Both.
Scrinch.
It's Grinch.
Scrooge.
Grooge.
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 Right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Hope you have a wonderful Christmas and New Year. Thank you to Tommy and Dan as well.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
Let's go. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And
wonderful.
That's it.
Yeah.
Goodbye. Sweet dreams. Adios.
Enjoy your Christmas bovril.
Boifey, boisey, bovril.
Jubbly bovril in my face.
Boifey, boisey, bovril.
Bye.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.